So, all around guy, congratulations.
Thank you.
Jameson, you can stay up here as well. You football players and Coach Heath Worley, come on up here. I talked to Mike this morning. He is at a family Christmas get-together that he couldn't get away from tonight. And so he sent Heath Worley, an assistant coach, to come in and fill in with him. But he got a hold of these student-athletes. And I told him to tell them that they need to talk a little bit tonight about their season. And if he didn't tell you, it's too bad. You get that opportunity when you do so well. It was a pleasure to watch these guys. And I, as I sit in the audience and listen to what we've done in art and what we did at the Academic Olympiad and what I hear from Kurt from what happened back close up, I'm very fortunate to hang around students like this every day. And I say it time and time again, the biggest regret I have in my job is I don't get to hang around them enough, that I'm around adults too much instead of being around these people that make things happen at our high school and are great leaders and examples to the other students. And I appreciate their efforts both in the classroom, in the hallways, and on the athletic fields and in the competition with the academic Olympiads and what they do in the arts and so on. It's a special place at Logan High School. Do you want to talk first or you want to listen to them first?
I'll let them. They're, okay, we're great. Here for them.
You look like you want to jump right on the mic.
Go ahead, John.
Introduce you to who you are. Talk a little bit about, tell them what position you played and what you thought was the highlight of the year for you.
I'm John Schmidt. I was the running back. Had a great season. I don't know, I can't really pick out one event, but it was all amazing. Just being around the team. We had a great team. It was fun going to practice every day, being around those guys. So, that's
good.
Right.
Thank you. I need
to share. Okay, well, I'm Jameson, as we know. I'm a receiver and a cornerback. And I don't know, the whole season was just a highlight. I don't know, just waiting for it our whole life to. That winning touchdown pass is the highlight of the season.
I'm Johnny Luke. Sorry, I'm in shorts. I just got out of basketball practice. But I play cornerback, and I think just the competitiveness that we have and the brotherhood that we grew, like just getting through the season together. And knowing that we always wanted to win a state championship and, like, that just drive to be that good was always just nice to have, just grew, made us grow together and everything. So, yeah.
You shake your head.
Oh, sorry.
Did I shake yours yet?
I feel like you did.
I'm Coulter Cottle. I was the offensive right tackle. And highlight of the season, to echo what these guys said, was probably the whole season. Dinners, practices, state championship, everything was fantastic. Homecoming. So, yeah.
Shake your hand. Thank you.
They're a hard act to follow, but my name's Heath Worley, and I coach the linebackers, and I've been on the staff for 3 years. And Coach wanted me to thank everybody in here for the support and help that we've had towards Logan High Athletics, especially with the new expansion of the weight room, the new off-season conditioning program, the support that we've had in that. It was integral in us providing opportunities for our athletes to become successful on the playing field and in the classroom. They've learned how to work hard, and they appreciate the opportunity. And Coach just wanted to really express his thankfulness for allowing innovative ideas to come into the school, especially with the administration allowing those ideas to come in, see how they produced such marvelous athletes. And I can attest that the off-season conditioning program with the addition of the weight room and the addition of our strength and condition coach, Matt Ray, without that, we would not have won a state championship. Our defense was on the field for three quarters, and we did not allow East in the end zone, and they averaged, they were the third highest scoring team in the state, and they averaged over 400 yards a game. And so it was a testament to the dedication of these athletes. Now, John's not going to mention it. He is the one that made a block that helped DJ get away. Johnny led the state in interceptions. He's also about fifth in the nation in interceptions. Would you have 11 on the year?
Yeah, buddy.
And he should have had a lot more. And so that's just our football program. Like I said, Coach really wanted to thank everybody in here. It was a community effort, and it's a community celebration for what we have.
All right. Now you get to shake your hands.
Should I shake your hand?
Yeah, why not? Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks, Coach. Appreciate you.
This young man plays another one of the great outstanding sports at Logan High School called soccer. Last year in our first state playoff game, he had both of his bones broken in his lower part of his leg against East. And he comes back and catches a winning touchdown against seeing anyone from Adams here, so we are going to
skip it.
He never said anything about it, so can you text him very quickly?
We'll just move on. Okay, while we're waiting for that, we'll go to a presentation by, this will be on our close-up trip, and I guess Jason, we'll have you come up again.
The week after Thanksgiving, Logan High participated in going to close-up. I have a kind of sample agenda that the students participated in over the week. Logan High has participated in close-up for many, many, many years. When I was a student, they were participating in it, and they had been doing that, I think, since the 1970s. It's a wonderful tradition for these students to have that opportunity, especially when more and more districts are trying to limit travel of that magnitude. It's fortunate that the school board sees value in this trip. We do have a few students here that attended the trip, if you'd like to talk to them at all. So. We had a few.
Here. We want to hear from them all.
We took 11 students. We took Vice Principal Kirk Allen. We also took Social Studies teacher Kathleen Cottle. And they had a, I can't speak for them, but we had a marvelous week. One of the highlights for me was Capitol Hill Day, and just seeing the kids move around the Capitol. The building, the Library of Congress. They met with Representative Bishop on the floor of the House of Representatives. They met with Senators Orrin Hatch and Senators Mike Lee. The students were able to ask them questions, and it was a really good opportunity for the students to see government up close, to see how easy it is for them to have their voices heard if they so choose. And so Capitol Hill Day was one of the highlights for me. And, of course, the end of the day is theater night at Ford's Theater. And we saw Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which warms the Scrooge's heart every year. And so I enjoy that. And I do want to kind of give an invitation to any school board members in coming years. If you keep approving the trip, we'd love to have you. And Gary went a few years ago. Yeah, and we'd love to have any of you come with us and just to see the value of the program. You will learn a lot, and you will have an amazing time as well. So you want to hear from...
Yeah, we want to hear from each one of them. You'd just like to tell us a bit about the things that you learned and what you felt was the highlight of your trip. And you would have
been. All right. My name is Taylor James, and I'd have to say the highlight for me was... probably Williamsburg, Virginia. It's a colonial town, and they have actors there that act like it's still the 1700s. And also, I'd have to agree with Mr. Sof, Capitol Hill Day, meeting with Senator Hatch and Lee, and our representative, of course, was a lot of fun, and getting to ask them questions about various policies and their lives in the public domain. So it was a lot of fun.
Josh. I'm Josh Griffiths. It was a really good experience. Unfortunately, it was just a week. I feel that the highlight for me was that Sunday we were able to attend the National Cathedral and National Shrine. And that was interesting. And then the following Friday, we were able to attend the Holocaust Museum. And that was an eye-opening experience.
Hi, I'm Andrew Finlayson. I thought Close Up was like a really great program because, like, not only did, like, my friendship with my fellow peers who went with me grow very much stronger, but I also grew very close with all the people there, including my roommates from another country. Well, not another country, but, like, I don't know what you call it. What do you call Puerto Rico? And then I really liked going to Ford's Theater, and I don't know, all of it was just so cool because you just, everywhere you'd go, you would just stand there and say, wow, am I really here? And, like, was this person here, or does this really happen here, you know? And so I thought every day it was just, like, a great experience.
Hi, I'm Ian Gerbeck. I think the highlight of the week for me was just going to Capitol Hill and meeting with our senators and sitting on the House floor in the House of Representatives. And I think I just learned a lot about people from other states and how government works, and it was just a really fun experience for me.
Were they in session?
No. Not only
that. They were about to.
They were there, though.
Yeah.
You were there the morning of, and they were going to go into session in the afternoon.
My name is Savannah. Like Andrew, I really liked getting to know people from all over the United States. We had workshops with just our little groups almost every day, and we got to share, like, our ideas and point of views, and that was really great.
My name's Coulter. I think Close Up is something that all upperclassmen should go on because not only do you get to see how our government works firsthand, but when you come back home, you feel a greater responsibility to be an active member in you know, in our society and vote and, you know, look into policies. So that's all I have to say.
My name is Chloe. One of my favorite things from the whole program was just meeting all the other people and getting to know them and their opinions. And like Savannah said, every day we would get into our workshop groups, which is where they separated us from our own classmates and put us with other people from other states, and we would do debates. And I learned so much from the debates and everything. And I love seeing the memorials and the monuments. That was definitely my favorite.
Any questions? Thank you. You'd just like to come? I think we'd all like to shake your hand.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for representing us.
Thank you.
You guys always do such a good job. That's why we keep letting you go.
Thank you.
Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Congratulations again.
Yes. Okay, we're going to have a presentation by Ted Downs. He's going to do that on insurance changes and on our time clocks.
That's how
Ted. You end. Way to go, Ted.
Well, what can I say? I've been asked to just take a minute and update the board on the couple of things that are going on in the district. First one is the time clock system. And when you hear time clock system and GHG, that's the same thing. GHG Corporation is the time clock system that was implemented in our district. And so we're getting really close to full implementation. So far, we basically have been testing it in all of our schools. We started in the district office, pushed it out to the schools. When we started this process, I didn't really realize it was quite as involved as it is. It's a lot of work. One of the problems that we've been having and that it's now solved is we use the biometric time clocks where you can just go up and put your finger on a pad. Well, we found that if somebody has lotion on their hands, if they have bad prints, there's a lot of little nuances, and there was not a backup system in place. We have that solved now. So if somebody's having problems clocking in, they can simply, after two failures, they can put in their ID number and we'll take it. Now that we have that, we feel confident that we can move forward because before then, people had no options to clock in. I've been spending a lot of time the last couple weeks editing and cleaning up the employees and the account numbers. It's a pretty sophisticated system. It identifies each person by their location, their job title, and to their specific 17-digit account number. And so it will seamlessly go right into the payroll system and, you know, with a lot of not much effort. So what we're going to do is the rest of December, we're going to make the final push for the employees to test it and to clean up anything that we still find. In January, we want to do a side-by-side comparison so that at the end of January, we'll be able to say, okay, this person has 80 hours on their timesheet. GHG says it's 80 hours. We'll be able to verify that we're getting good information. And then from February on, full implementation of the time clock system. The employees have been very patient. The supervisors have been very patient. And we know that there'll still be some issues, but we'll go forward and we'll solve them. There will still be some timesheets that will be turned in for things that are really not feasible to use, community ed, adult ed, coaching stipends, those types of things, but all of our hourly employees will be doing that. The goal is when we're all done, we're going to have better information, more detailed information, and it will also keep us in compliance more with the Fair Labor Standards. If we have to verify or defend hours or, you know, if we have questions, we're going to have punches in and out. We're going to have detailed information, whereas now basically we're going to buy a manual timesheet. So that's the plan, and we're going to move forward with that. Any questions on that one, I guess, before I go on to insurance?
So do people feel like they're being micromanaged?
You know, I'm sure that not everybody is you know, happy with it. I think some people feel like it's a way to get your thumb on people, but literally. But no, I haven't really had that feedback, at least to me, but I'm sure there'll be a certain amount of resistance. But the process has been going on long enough now that I think people are wrap their minds around it's a necessity, and they're behind it and supportive of it. So, you know, it'll take some time on the supervisor's part. It'll take some time on the employee's part as they learn it. But in the long run, we're going to have better information. So.
Refresh my memory, Ted. Is it for everybody, or is it just for classified?
Just for classified, yes. And then the ones that are non-exempt that are hourly. So. Yeah. The other thing that they wanted me to talk about briefly is just the insurance process, the open enrollment process, and currently where we are. Just briefly, as I'm sure you're all aware, each April we kind of get our renewal rates from our carrier. Our current carrier is EMI Health, and we decide how much money we have or we don't have. We get the insurance committee together. The negotiation teams also look at that, and we prioritize our needs and decide where we want to go with our health insurance. Currently, we're still lucky in that employees don't have to pay anything out of their pocket. The coverage is not as good as it was, I'm sure, 20 or 25 years ago, but it's still a good plan. Then we also have to look at things like, do we bid? Do we make plan modifications? Once we decide on a plan that we're going to go forward with next year, then it's a matter of implementing it. And what we traditionally do is we wait until the employees come back from their summer break. It's hard to send materials home in the summer. People aren't really in the mode of wanting to look at that. It's very expensive to mail those home and so forth. And you're not really sure you're getting in contact with everybody. So the process is once school gets back, we get a packet of information out to all the employees telling them of the different plans and the changes that have been made. And then that open enrollment window starts. It goes from about the third week in August till about the third week in September. So we go about a month. It has an effective date of September 1st, and EMI Health has been good to push those back and make them effective. So they have about a 3 or 3.5 week period to make their decisions. A lot of times we haven't had a lot of changes, and it's not a really big deal. This last year we had quite a bit of changes because we went from a traditional health insurance plan to a high deductible plan that works in conjunction with the health savings account. And the district put in a $360 kind of a contribution to kind of jumpstart everybody's HSA program. And it's through Tango Health. So if you hear Tango Health, that's what it is. It's our health savings account. And so the plan that we have this year has a high deductible. It takes care of all your preventative things 100%. But employees, if they're using the program, could potentially pay $2,500 per person or $5,000 per family max. It's ironic, though, that, we've actually improved our plan on the top end. So employees have a benefit enhancement in the fact that if you have large expenses, you're going to be capped at an earlier dollar value than even on our traditional plan. But the key component of a high deductible plan is that HSA, because that allows employees to withhold money tax-free, and it also encourages savings on a monthly basis so that when they have those potential out-of-pocket expenses, they have the money there. And so that's where the Tango Health component comes in. We also have an HRA through Pelion Benefits, and that was kind of started with our early retirement plan, but it also works for those that are over 65 or that don't have an HSA. The other option that we have about 75 employees doing is they're opting out of their health insurance coverage, and we're putting a larger amount, $4,368, into their HSA. And the reason a lot of people are doing that now is that with high deductibles on your plan, if somebody's spouse works at Utah State or at Cache School District or whatever, plans won't reimburse each other for those deductibles. And so they would do that, or if plans didn't have deductibles, they would start paying the other 20% right off the bat. And so most people feel like they get more value by opting out, having the single coverage, and then using that money for any of their out-of-pocket expenses. And like I said, we have quite a few people doing that now. It's a win-win, though, because the district is only paying basically the single rate, and the savings, the difference between the single and the couple or the single and the family. And so that has helped us to control the cost of insurance as well. Depositing the money, we had a couple of people that were unhappy maybe about the timeline when the money was deposited, and I think Christy was in on one of those discussions, and we solved that. But where we have the open enrollment through about the third week of September, it's about the 1st of October before those monies are actually deposited either into the HRA or to the HSA. and before they're actually able to draw on that money. So next year we're going to be a little more clear in that. Here is our target for the actual deposits, and so there's no expectation that on September 1st that money is literally there. And that was the issue there. So health insurance continues to be a challenge, and as you all know, and I think the employees have learned to use their HSA. There's a lot of they all get a debit card. They have an online feature, and the ability to put away that money is really key from now on, and hopefully we can continue on. So. Yeah, we're actually, I'm not really sure. District-wide, it's about $28,000 a month that employees are withholding out of their checks, tax-free, to reserve for the medical. And unlike flexible spending programs that you're maybe familiar with, the HSA money does not expire at the end of the time period. You can modify it anytime you want. So you can start out doing 50 and change it to 200, change it back to 75. You can change it anytime you want. So it's really flexible for the employees.
A lot of the employees using that.
Yes, a really high share. I'd say about 80% are doing at least, you know, $25 plus. And like I said, you know, you take 30,000 times 12 approximately. That's a lot of money that's being put into those accounts.
What's your feedback on the Tango interface?
It's really been positive. They use an online system that you can have them archive your receipts. You can reimburse yourself for expenses that maybe you didn't have the opportunity to use your debit card on. So it has a lot of tools that employees can use to benefit from there. I mean, even if you don't have money in your account and you have some big hospital expense, you can actually pay yourself back as you have that money accumulate back into your HSA. Whereas flexible spending, once you'd miss that window, you couldn't go back and reimburse yourself for that. And so Tango has a lot of tools. Next year, after we're up and going for a year, I think it'd be good to have them come out, and they have offered to do that and do workshops on how to navigate that and so forth. Last year, there was a lot of paperwork and a lot of other things to do there, and the educational process was a little bit hard. And so next year, I'd like to do that. So, yeah.
So have you started discussions already for next year? I mean, when does that insurance come in?
We don't know anything until usually the end of March, 1st of April. Yeah. Just plan on a large increase. That's what we do. And we're usually never disappointed, so, yeah.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thanks.
Ted.
Okay, I don't see nobody from the PTA or the classified, unless Stacy, was you going to do anything?
No, Sarah.
Okay.
Kirk
is here. Yeah, Mike Moudreau, we already heard their report, so Kirk.
Come up.
Yes, we have 25% here.
You know, when I agreed to be the president-elect for the Administrators Association, I had no idea I'd be here long enough to be the president, so I'm going to ask for a recall here. Not that I don't mind attending board meetings. If you'd start them earlier, wouldn't let Ted talk so long. It'd be. Hey, but as an association, we are probably were the last association to settle as far as our salary and agreement. This year, we went through a lot of meetings with our association members. We laid a lot of things out on the table and thought we had agreed to them, came back and revisited them. So it wasn't any way whatsoever a slam dunk of let's just like take the money and run. We tried to make sure that the money that was allocated to the association was given out or distributed in a way that we felt was fair and equitable. At the same time, recognize some of the challenges faced by some of our younger administrators who haven't been in the system with us long enough to really benefit from a one-time type of allocation. So we redistributed, tried to, for those who were on the beginning steps of the salary schedule and had not had equivalents to a step on the salary schedule, we took the money and divided it up amongst the, I think there was five or six of them that we said, we will give you the equivalent of a step of the money that we were allocated. We'll give you the equivalent of a step. Then anything that was left over, we will divide up evenly with the rest of the administrators. So those folks who are new administrators and perhaps are having to meet the challenges of raising a young family and having the weddings and sending kids off to school and such, they were able to receive a bigger percentage of the money than some of us who are a little bit longer in the tooth than the others. So we felt good about it, but it did take a lot of discussion. Went back and forth with Marshall at times, and we had good discussions with Marshall about some things that we felt strongly about. But I think when it came down to it, we recognized that the time for change and some changing some of these things is probably yet to come in the future. But we also felt that this wasn't the time to plant our feet in the sand and say, this is what we want, we demand, knowing that it's not easy for anybody. So then we also agreed that we're going to come back and negotiate with our language in our negotiated agreement about a reduction in force. As the administrators this year dealt with the classifieds reduction in force policy that was had to be put together, we could see some things we did not want to run into as administrators. And so we have a letter of agreement, memo of understanding from the superintendent. That will be one of our first things that we're going to try and address right after the school year. We'll meet as an association with the superintendent and try and come up with something that we feel will take care of that. It's a tough time for all educators and school board members. Our principals are dealing with an awful lot. A lot of changes coming through with the new Common Core that they're seeing and their need to implement it. We're having a lot of frustrations by not being able to have the old traditional professional development days that we used to have back in the glory years. But yet a lot of things are coming to our teachers, and we want them to be current. We want them to be at the leading edge of things that are going on. We're grateful for our curriculum directors here. Robin isn't with us, but we're grateful for her and her leadership. But boy, there's a lot out there, and we're trying to balance out taking our staff out of the schools, taking administrators out of the schools to meet those demands. And those are some of the challenges our administrators are facing and some of the angst that they're feeling and some of the anxiety that they face. But they're honorable people, men and women, and they'll do great jobs and with whatever they're dealt. Wonderful people. We're very fortunate to have the great administrators that we have across the board. It's good to be able to represent them. Any questions? Okay.
I have one.
Okay, sir.
I had a young lady into the bakery today, and we had a little discussion about you. And do you know the song about Poor Papa?
Well, is it an old song?
Yeah, it's an old song. Poor Papa, he gets nothing at all, but Mama goes here, Mama goes there.
Yes.
It was your wife, and I was asked if that was the truth, and she said that's not the truth with you. That you get all you want. It's not poor Kurt.
Lynn, you know she has a disability, and sometimes it affects her cognitive function, and so, yeah.
I know who their disability is.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We need action on the consent calendar. Have you had an opportunity to look at that? And if so, I would entertain a motion.
I would move adoption of the consent calendar.
We, Ann Geary has moved that we accept the consent calendar. We have a second.
I'll second it.
An think Fred Dursby, he was looking at it. Seconded by Fred Dursch. All those in favor of accepting the consent calendar, you say aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you. We will. Okay, we have a discussion item by Zane. He wants to discuss a health insurance consultant. So, Zane, at this time, if you would.
Okay. I think Ted's presentation kind of a good segue for this discussion. If you could go to your board portal, and there's a finance section. I'll refer to something in there in a minute. But things are evolving really fast in the health insurance business, and there are lots of changes going on all the time. There's legislation pending this year requiring the school districts to go out to bid every year for the health insurance. We essentially did that this past year. We looked at a few different options, which is what resulted in the change that we made. But it's basically to the point where we could use the help of a health insurance consultant to help us through the process of bidding, to help us better manage the plans that we have. And there are some companies out there these days that do a really good job of providing support to school districts and other employers in managing their health care programs. The idea is that the cost of those programs is made up and more by the benefits of the services they provide, either in savings directly to your health insurance plan, getting what we have for less, or actually the benefits that they provide more than exceed the cost of the services that they provide. Some of these consultants actually work out arrangements with, like, the health insurance companies that they, the fees that they charge the school districts are nil or close to nil, because they sometimes will take their payment via commissions from sales of a product to employees. But anyway, just to give you an idea of what some of those services are, if you're in the portal, I put a couple of links in there for you to just look at. There are a couple of companies in particular that I've highlighted here just as an example. One is a company called GBS Benefits, and they are employed.
Can you describe this where we're going?
Where
first,
it's
please?
Not on, it's not
it
on.
Yeah. And
what part?
But just
finance, bottom line.
Finances?
It says fiscal year 12 finance. The only thing that's there on mine.
And there should be a thing that says B.
You might need to refresh your page.
Okay. They go clear down to the bottom, and it's on the left hand side.
Bottom line, need to reload.
So the left hand side.
So
GBS
Benefits?
Have GBS and so I put a link there to
second.
GBS
hold
Benefits.
On.
Click
on find out.
It's GBS.
Hold on, let's just
oh,
make sure
I don't
want
it. And I put a link to Morton okay. Benefits.
Gotcha. I went into financial.
It's right there.
The bottom.
GBS is actually a firm that provides services to several of the school districts. In fact, if you look as a percentage of enrollment, they have more kids. The big districts are using GBS a lot. Cash School District has a contract with GBS, but if you would go to that link, and you can get an idea and look at some of the services they provide. So if you go to that link, it brings you to their homepage, and if you click on services, and you'll just notice that they address things like health care reform, Utah Health Exchange, underwriting. They do their own underwriting. So that, like, if you have an insurance quote from a company, they will actually take that information, and they have their own actuaries that they can verify if the quote you got is in the ballpark of what it ought to be based on your experience. They have an expert, for instance, in wellness. I went down to a workshop last week that they hosted,
to, where they have the person and that's her deal, is to help school districts or their clients, whether, you know, they're not just school district as clients, but implement wellness programs into their organizations, and the whole ultimate goal being to make people more healthy so that they have fewer claims. Hopefully that results in fewer absentees, more teacher time in front of the kids, which theoretically is supposed to help enhance performance, you know, how well the students do. They do a number of other things. If you'd like where to click on human resources, you can see that they provide expertise in a lot of areas that have to do with human resources. They do workshops, and all of these things are part of the fee. So the idea is that there are a lot of calls that we'll make to our attorney with regards to these issues. When, you know, we could go to GBS, and they've got the expertise right there, and it's already paid for as part of what the arrangement is under the consulting. So
that's... Do you know a ballpark figure?
Some of the big... I think with cash, is cash? I think like they told me about $50,000 a year, but I don't think it'll cost us that much. I think, I'm guessing 15 to 20.
And what are we currently paying? Are we using an insurance broker currently?
No, we've never used a broker. Well, this last year, we basically had an arrangement with Eric Falk. We paid him a fee for service. It wasn't a brokerage fee. Okay. He helped us go through our thing, and we paid him a flat amount. I've never been a big fan of the broker thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I'm more inclined to say, what's the fee for the service above that so that keeps it all clean? That's where I'm leaning right now. So, anyway, there's GBS. If you were to look at, if you were to go back to the portal now and you were to do a link on Morton Benefits, they're another company. They do a lot more with commercial business than they do school business. But if you click on their benefits link, you'll see that they have a lot of the same services. And so what I would like to do is get your blessing, if it's okay, to put together a request for proposal and send that out to GBS, to Morton. There's a couple other big players in the state, I'm told, and get a proposal back for them to see just exactly what it might cost. And if there's, it's been suggested, and I think it's a good one, that we involve the Health Insurance Committee in looking at these things and evaluating the proposals when we get them back, so that if we decide to make a recommendation, it's something that there's pretty good buy-in on. And so I would, you know, unless there's some protest on your part tonight, I would anticipate moving ahead with development of the RFP. I've been able to pick up one that Willa used recently, one that Salt Lake City School District used, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel completely. And maybe by a work session in January or February, have something back that we can look at and talk about and see how you feel about it before we make a move going forward.
I like their websites, both of those,
yeah.
Too.
So they're very, one of the things we'd like to do is, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later when I do my discussion with you, but we plan to have a kiosk set up downstairs in HR. When an employee comes in, they can sit down at the computer, they can get themselves enrolled, they can get enrolled in health insurance and other things, both GBS, Morton, EMIA's working towards, you know, helping set up links so that they can automatically enroll in their retirement, their health insurance, their everything that they need right there, one-stop shop. And when they're done,
once we get our new fiscal system up. We've got all the personnel stuff in there, which automatically links to payroll, which automatically, you know, we'll have them signed up in health insurance and a lot of things. I think we'll be able to do things for a lot with a lot less manpower and
less data entry.
And once it's entered once, it's in multiple places. So I think they're, you know, it's, things are moving to the point where I think we need to head this direction, or at least take a look at it and see if it fits.
So this wouldn't necessarily, do these guys have like a contract with specific insurance companies?
Or no, they basically, they're contracted with us. So for instance, if the legislature were to say, you've got to go out and bid your insurance every year, we could say to these guys, okay, take care of that for us. And they would solicit the contract. They would solicit the bids from the insurance companies. They would play the role of evaluating those bids to make sure that we have apples to apples comparisons with all the different benefits and help us with an assurance that we're getting the best bang for our buck. And then it's a consulting service.
So they would go out to those people that we've worked with, probably like EMIA, they would.
Yeah, for instance, you are going to bid that. They'd be looking with the MI, PHP, and healthcare, whoever all the players are, to get proposals. I think, Ted can vouch for this. I think Logan School District has been fairly forward thinking in how we deal with our health insurance. And some people with maybe argue that it's not the favorite place they would like to be, but I think we're in a position where we need to be as far as the market goes, as far as helping employees have ownership in their health care. There's an interest now in being more healthy because they pay the bill up to a point, all of it, if they're not. And so I think provides us opportunities to put in wellness programs. And anything we can do to help the employee be a better consumer of their health care, the better. So, do you have anything to add, Ted?
I think that covers it.
So what kind of lesson do you need from us?
Just a nod that you're okay if I move that direction. There will be no decisions made without your approval.
So are we nodding?
Yeah.
We don't
need
a motion.
Just do you agree to it?
Just do it.
Same.
Just tell me whoa if you don't want me to.
We've nodded.
Okay. We don't have any problems with you doing this.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, I guess we'll have our audit report. So, Zane and our good, wonderful buddies from Jones and Simpkin. And
might need some chocolate for this.
You also have
electronic.
Do you have an electronic copy if you'd rather have a hard copy for tonight? To keep in your book.
That's what took about 90 pages of the 150.
It's on there if you
want to see that. I like the colors in the book, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my notes are in.
Do you want me over here?
Yeah.
It's still picking it up. It's just going to be something going to the amplifier, so it's going to get out. So,
yeah. Maybe we'll be recording.
But it's being recorded.
Okay. Okay. Well, we appreciate the opportunity to come and go over this report with you. The audit went very well this year. We had, good timing in terms of, getting through things. We met with the audit committee on the beginning, and we had a wrap-up meeting on the end. So you know, a lot of the issues we've dealt with in some detail, so I'm not going to, you know, completely rehash all of that information, but I would like to touch on a few of the highlight things, look at the reports, and just a couple of key places in here. Does that sound all right, Lynn? Okay. So let's just walk through some of the reports first. Page 1 and 2, there's three reports in here. I feel like I've given this talk enough that Ann could give it for me. But there's three reports in here, and the first one is on page 1 and 2. That's the main auditor's opinion. It's the one that says that the financial statements have been audited in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards, and they're presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. It tells you that there's other audit reports that have been issued. We've issued the one that we call the Government Auditing Standards Report, or some people call it the Yellow Book Report because it's in a yellow book. And that is the one on internal controls and compliance at the financial statement level. And it also talks about that we have issued a report that deals just with the federal funds that we've audited. And so that's what this report tells us, and there are no problems here, so no issues that we need to really go into or discuss. The next section is the management's discussion and analysis. That's where the pretty graphs are that Zane gives us to put in here, and that's where the Reader's Digest version of the financial statements is found. So if you fall asleep reading this kind of stuff, struggle through these few pages from page 4 to 13. That's a good summary of what happened in the year. It compares it to last year. And, you know, Zane prepares this part of it, and he's kind of highlighted some of the significant changes in there. Is there anything you want to point out in that section, Zane, while we're on that one? We'll look at a couple of those pages as we
take every opportunity we can to do things that will help strengthen those fund balances over time.
Okay.
The other thing, I just in terms of if there are some changes this year in terms of reporting requirements,
yep,
that make it look a little differently.
Yep, we'll cover. Yep, we'll cover that.
That especially with the use of the 10% of basic and how that is.
Yep, we'll talk about that. Good point. Okay, so then moving on page 15 and 16, if remember there are three presentations in a government financial statement. Page 15 and 16 is the one that's the business type presentation. So that's the page where you can look at the school as if it was a business, as best you can do that. And the assets are all reported in there. The liabilities are reported in there. Depreciation is recorded in there to try and look at the school district as if it was, you know, a business on Main Street. That's the function of these two pages. And in terms of looking at that, at the bottom of page 15, you can see what we have in net assets. You know, by far the largest component of net assets is the buildings and the equipment and all of our capital asset type things. You can see that we've got money that's restricted, and then we have some unrestricted funds in this snapshot. The other thing that you can see on page 16, if you look at the third line up from the bottom, is from a business perspective, in we lost money this year, so we had almost a $1.6 million loss. If we were, you know, and again, any one year is not, you know, $1.6 million is a fairly big loss. But I worry more about trends than I do one snapshot. If we have the, you know, the net assets or the fund balance to absorb it, but that's not something we've had that many times at the school district where we've had, you know, a loss in that particular, you know, spot right there. If we go over to page 17 and 19, that's where we take a look at the funds. And so at that level, it's what we call a current resource focus. We don't have assets, long-term assets or long-term liabilities. We're focusing on what do we have to spend now and next year, kind of a thought. And so it's more about cash, receivables, and payables and fund balance. And so in that particular area, on the balance sheet side, one number that we want to look at is unassigned fund balance in the general fund, in our general M&O fund. And that is the last line under fund balance. And we have some new terminology, and you remember we've been talking about this for a little while, that the terminology was going to change and that we had to classify, you know, what's being carried over to next year into some new terms, and so that they're showing up now, and it's non-spendable, restricted, committed, assigned, and unassigned, okay? And I'm not going to kind of go back through all of that technical detail, but the unassigned fund balance is an important line that we watch. That's the money that we have that's the most available to be budgeted over to the next year, and we only have $19,000. There. Okay, so you've still got your undistributed reserve and committed, but in terms of the other reserves that we've historically had, you know, and that's kind of where we were last year too in some ways, is that we don't have a lot there. We're down to where your reserves are very thin in the general fund. You've got a little bit in the debt service fund, and we've got some in the capital projects funds. And we've got some in the other funds, and we'll look at that real quickly. On page 19, you can kind of see what the change was in those different funds. You know, we didn't have a lot of big movement in the general fund, which was good because we don't have a lot of room to move. And the debt service fund is not too concerning because that's just there for our debt, and so we shouldn't have a problem. And I think you would know this, but a lot of money came out of our capital projects fund this year because we had the normal capital things, and then we needed to use that for the plan that was set forth for the general fund. And so that $3 million reduction was a fairly significant reduction, and we only have $1.9 million left to go over into the next year. And we started out with 4.9, right? So that's kind of significant there. And then the other governmental funds, we still have some fund balance. But we have to remember what that is. That's, you know, in terms of being able to use it generally, you've got your non-K through 12, and it's got some fund balance, but it's got to be used pretty much for what you use those funds for. And you've got your food service, and it's got, you know, some fund balance. And then you've got student funds. And so while we have some fund balance there, it's not as free as unassigned fund balance in the general fund. Is that a fair statement, Zane? Is that how you'd characterize that? So that's kind of the snapshot of what we've got there in that fund balance area. If we keep moving along, we will skip through the notes at this point. Let's go back and look at the other audit opinions for a minute. Go all the way back to page 65. That's where the government auditing standards report is. And so, again, our focus on this report is controls and compliance. And we did not have any compliance findings. So in terms of major laws or grants or things that where we would think that a potential liability could arise, we did not find anything there that we needed to report. Internal control, this is the area where we have to hold up what the district does to that very high theoretical model and say, how close to perfect are you? Okay. And kind of the good news this year is that while we still had similar comments to last year, we did downgrade one of those findings quite a bit. And so if you look at page 70, one of those has to do with how much documentation we have around the control system. And until we have a really big, expensive documentation project, that one's not going to go away. The second one is one that we put there because we have audit adjustments. And so if we're making audit adjustments, by definition, your control system isn't perfect, because if it was perfect, we wouldn't have to adjust it, right? So, well, most auditors make adjustments, and that's what you'd expect. Again, we're holding it up to a very stringent model. But our audit adjustments were not so many, and not nearly of the magnitude that we've had to do in some years. So we moved that down on the severity scale quite a bit, and didn't call that a material weakness. So that's a good improvement. Feel good about that. And then there's a third one, and this is a compliant. Well, let's talk about the A133 report, and then I'll point that one to you. So that's the Yellow Book report. On A133, page 67 and 68, we have to, again, look at controls and compliance just at federal funds. And so that's what that report is about. For internal controls, we did not find any specific control weaknesses that we felt like needed to be dealt with directly at federal funds. And we have a pretty darn good history here of managing federal funds. From a compliance point of view, they set forth in the materials that the feds put out some very detailed and strict guidance as we look at the different funds that we have to rotate through here. And one of the things that, as we looked at things and talked to Zane, that we need to do just a little bit better job on. It's really, I don't worry about it very much, but it's the rule kind of thing. So when you're in compliance, it's pass-fail. You either did it or you didn't do it. And then there's no, we can't talk about materiality or any of those kind of things. But one of those rules is when we purchase something that's over $25,000, we have to check a federal list to see if you're buying it from somebody that you shouldn't be doing business with. The probability of us buying something here from somebody that we shouldn't be doing business with is very, very low. Nevertheless, that's the rule. You've got to check it, and you've got to document that you checked it. And so on some of the things that we looked at, we couldn't see that had been done. If it had been done, it wasn't documented enough that we could give you credit for that. And so we had to say, you've got to do a better job documenting that you're checking that, even though it's not a very risky thing that you could run into somebody trying to sell services or products or something like that. It's on the federal, what we call it, the federal debarred list, meaning they've been really naughty and the federal government won't let you do business with them anymore. So that's what our third comment is on page 71, is we've got to do a better job just documenting that. Well, again, we just like to see that, just as long as we're addressing the whole thing, we just want to see that, say, yes, we check it, and this is how we do it, and then we won't have to visit this issue again. So we can just tighten it up all the way around.
Is that a recent law?
No. It's been there. It's been there. You know, I think we've checked for it. I think when we've checked for things in the past, we've seen some compliance with it. It just happened the ones that we selected this time, because we're random sampling through different kinds of things. And so if we pick one and it's not there, it's not like we can say, well, we'll go look at some others, and you did that, so you're good. It's like if we pick it and it isn't done, it's not done.
What really has changed things with that, as far as, I think the law's always been there, but until we started getting our money, we didn't have a lot of money. We weren't spending big chunks.
That's a very good point.
So, I mean, like with the ARRA money and the Title I and special ed, all of a sudden we were making purchases above $25,000, which
that's a good point.
Is like a big magnet to an auditor's eyes. They're looking at that. And I brought this to our attention last year, and the road to hell's paved. It's really good to paint something like that. And to make sure that was flag, and it never happened. And so
that's where you're headed.
That's where I'm headed.
No. We threw the penalty marker on him, and now he's gonna fix it this time. So
we just need to make it a point in our purchasing procedures, and we need to when we say to get ready in there. For purchases above $25,000, part of the requirement as you put the requisition in is to check that debarred list before it's ever approved.
Yeah, like I say, and all the government auditing I've done, I've never found anyone that's done business with a DeBard party. So it just, where we live and who we do business with, it's just not a very likely thing. But that's, you took the federal money, you have to play by their rules. Okay?
It only applies to federal money.
Yeah, it wasn't. A lot of times there wasn't anything for us to check. So it's been, it's been very sporadically checked because there wasn't anything to check some years. So okay. And then on page 77 and 78 is where the Utah compliance report is. So I guess we really have four opinions in here. You remember the state auditor puts out a very, it gets thicker every year, a manual for us with all these things that we're supposed to check against state laws and. And it's really been loaded up in the last couple of years with things from the Department of the State Department of Education. We just keep getting, they just love us to check every little thing that we can think of. But we do, and we didn't have any particular issues in that. So it's a lot of work, but you did good. So that's what that opinion says. Then the other communication I want to touch on is the management letter that we put out. And what that is the first section of it is the required communications that the auditors have to do to those charged with governance. We've been over that with the audit committee. But just quickly, we have to talk about the quality of the accounting practices, and we had a discussion about that. We mentioned in there that we had some new accounting policies because that definitional stuff that we talked about for fund balance, that's new, so that's mentioned in there. We talked about accounting estimates, that there are estimates in there. How long assets are going to live is always a big estimate. Governments are particularly tricky. You seem to be able to stretch out assets way beyond what other people can do. Buildings, those kinds of things, yeah. The post-retirement estimate is a fairly significant estimate, and we've been using some data, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But that's one where there's some educated guessing going on as to what our liability is there. We didn't have any problems, difficulties doing the audit. We did make some audit adjustments. We've talked about that. We passed on a couple of little small ones. They're attached to just communicate that there were a couple of little things we didn't fix. It's just not efficient to do it. If we had disagreements, if Zane and I had a disagreement over an accounting matter, even if we resolve it my way, we would want to talk about that just so you would know what kinds of things did we really wrestle over. But we didn't have anything like that we dealt with. We tell you that we do make the people that are involved with the audit sign a representation letter. They have to sign it and say, yes, we answered all your questions truthfully. We've shown you all the books. We've looked at the report that's been generated, and we think it's right, too. And we rely on that, so we tell you that. We have no other independent auditors involved in this audit, so we mentioned that. A new thing that they make us talk about just a little bit. Sometimes people have a question because the financial statements have numbers, notes, and then schedules and numbers in the back. And some people wonder, well, what's the difference between the numbers in the front and the numbers in the back? And the audit opinion kind of goes over that. But the stuff that we have in the back are just supplementary schedules, but we've still audited that. It's still been subject to the auditing procedures, and we're still saying those numbers are materially correct. And so that's that little paragraph. Internal control, we've talked about. All our internal control comments are up in the main report. And actually, there were two internal control and one compliance thing. We've talked about those. And then other matters are where we make suggestions, just comments for consideration or little things that we think maybe can be improved on. We had two little comments for the district just to look at. One is that when we did the fall pupil audit, as we were looking through the documentation, we felt like that needs to be looked at again by the district in terms of what's happening there. The ones that we tested specifically, we didn't really have a problem with. But as we were looking for them, we saw some others that concerned us just a little bit, and we just don't want to have problems with that documentation. So we're just suggesting from a quality control point of view to look at that and make sure that the district people that are responsible for that are doing what the superintendent, I guess, wants them to do so that that trail is clear and accurate. And then the other thing that we're commenting on is we had a study done to help us estimate that early retirement liability, and we paid for that. And what we did is we took that study and we kind of developed a little bit of a mathematical model that we could apply to the numbers that Ted develops for us. And so we said, well, Ted developed these numbers for the year that that study was done, and then here's what they said the liability was. And so we've been plugging those numbers that Ted gives us in and using that same kind of factor to try and estimate the liability. But since that study was done, you know, some things have changed with what we're doing with that particular calculation, and we've only done one study on it. And so if it's possible to budget that in, we'd like to see another data point to make sure that we're getting that liability right, rather than just relying on one data point from 2008. So that we're suggesting that maybe we take a look at that and see if we could get them to look at it again with the current assumptions and just have them give us those data points again to make sure we're not way high or way low on that estimated liability. So that's, we're not demanding it. That sounds about right.
Doesn't have to come out of the exact one account, though.
Yeah, a lot of people would, you know, say that needs to be done very frequently. But when Zane and I talked about it, we really felt like getting that first study and the approach that we were taking, it could run us for a ways. But we're just getting concerned that maybe we need to look at it again. So we're not demanding that. We're just suggesting that be considered. Let's see. One thing we didn't mention that is, where one thing that is different in the financial statements, I forgot to say this, Marshall, as we were going by, but one of the things that's important to remember about the financial statements this year is what we call 10% of basic was recorded in the general fund this year, and that's been done. You know, it's done different ways. Back when Paul was here, you know, he recorded in the capital project funds and expenditures were recorded over there. And some districts in some years would transfer money out of that capital projects fund and send it back over to the M&O fund. And what happened was is the state auditor took a look at that practice and said, you know what, if you're going to use that money for M&O purposes, we would like that money to be recorded directly there, not be transferred, nor put those expenditures in the capital projects fund. And so they clarified that and covered that in the training that we went to in May. And so in accordance with those instructions, Zane just did that. But that is a little different than what's been done in the past. And that's how it'll be done in the future, is my understanding. That's what we'll do from now. Go that, because that's going to go away. So I don't know if you can see it on a stand-alone basis very easily, but if you were to get out four reports and look at them very carefully, you might notice that some money shifted around a little bit where it's recorded. But it was done correctly. It's how it should have been done.
So the requirement is different. And so
I think what happened was the history of it is that as districts were strained, you know, the state kind of said, you know what, we're okay having a certain amount of money, this 10% of basic, spent out of the capital project levy. And it was done either by moving those expenditures there or transferring the money back for many years. But the state auditor looked at it and said, you know what, that's not great accounting theory to have M&O expenditures in the capital projects fund, even though the state Board of Education or the, you know, said, yeah, you can do that to help with the funding. So they're saying, just record it theoretically where it goes. And if it's an M&O expenditure, put that levy in M&O. If it's a capital expenditure, put it in capital. But don't put general expenditures in the capital projects fund. But this state has done that for years and years and years. But when the state auditor says, don't do that anymore, then we quit. So that's, really, again, I think audit went very smoothly. I think, you know, Zane and Ted, you know, were prepared and we got through it timely.
State auditor, is he elected? Or
yes, he's an elected official.
Who is it?
It's Austin Johnson. And his staff have a lot of influence with how things are recorded in the state. They're actually very good. Austin is very well respected in the accounting community. He's been on the GASB board. He currently sits on the auditing standards board. Austin's very knowledgeable.
And that's like every 4-year elected position?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not one that changes a whole lot. If you're the Republican incumbent, you know, you're not going to lose. So there's a lot of continuity there. Yeah, but he actually, I mean, I do enough auditing in different states that I interact with, you know, state auditors from several different states. I have great respect for the quality work that our state auditor does. He's actually quite good.
Do we have any other questions?
Yeah.
Auditor's office does the BATC audit,
mm-hmm.
and then another person does INTEX. None of them write people up for the things that you do, and I know at INTEX, where the principal does everything, that segregation of duties and everything doesn't happen. So is it just that you're more particular, your firm is, or?
I would say we do it right.
Okay.
I can tell you that, you know, I don't know what would be happening down at the at BATC, but because I audit the Space Dynamics Lab, I meet with the state auditor's office every year on a pre-audit and post-audit type thing over this Utah State's audit, and they are tough as nails on them. I mean, I have seen them write them up for a control violation for an expenditure for $3,000, you know, that didn't follow policies or procedures. I mean, that's on a university that's spending $800 million a year, $3,000. I mean, their materiality level that they're auditing to would be in the millions of dollars, you know, to even book an entry. But from a control point of view, when they find something that is out of bounds that way, you know, they're there. The difference is at Utah State and at the Space Dynamics Lab, because of how much they get audited by different auditors, and they have federal auditors on site at Utah State and at the Space Dynamics Lab. For example, their documentation over how their system works is extensive. I mean, you could pile up the procedures manuals on how they handled transactions and contracts. And so they have extensive documentation. And, you know, the other thing that they have is they have, you know, a lot of accounting staff. The Space Dynamics Lab has 5 CPA accountants on staff. And so we don't make, you know, we don't make journal entries there. They work really, really, really hard to, you know, to deal with those kind of things. But they're under tremendous pressure, you know, to perform at that level. They've got a federal auditor sitting there every day looking at what they do. And so they've got more money invested in their controls and how many people they have on staff and, you know, those kind of things. But the rule has not changed. And so
different
auditors look at that. And I would, you know, might sound bad, but I think I have a lot better training than a lot of other auditors in that area because I do deal with those type of audits where I interface with federal auditors that are there on a daily basis. And the other thing that gives me experience in understanding what they're doing and how you do this is we audit public companies. And that's the only type of audit that gets a real internal control audit. So when you audit a public company and then they meet a certain size, in addition to doing their regular financial statement audit, you have to do what's called a SOX 404 audit, which is Sarbanes-Oxley. And I don't know if you're familiar with those terms, but that is a real internal control audit. And it is very, very aggressive. And that is really what the model was set for this, to hold that up. Because when they have internal control findings in a public company, that can affect their stock price. So it is a really big deal. Not only do we issue the audit, but the officers of a public company have to sign by name off that they, as management, have reviewed all of their controls. They have tested them independently of the auditor, and that they are functioning correctly. And so that's the kind of theoretical model we're talking about.
And that's when all of ours changed, right, is when they decided we...
And that's when the whole world changed, you know, to do that. And they said, you know what, we know a lot of people are not going to be able to put the resources to get a clean opinion. We know Logan City School District is not a public company. They're not going to spend that kind of money. But we want the people charged with governance to understand how good is their internal control system, where does it have some potential weaknesses, and then, you know, make practical decisions and say, well, based on the resources we have, is it a good idea, you know, to do a big documentation thing and maintain that and have the staffing that it takes to do that, you know, or not. In a public company, they do it. They don't have a choice because it's so costly to have audit findings and have it affect your stock price. And in at Utah State, from a hassle factor, it's very costly to have the feds picking on you all the time over what you haven't done. It takes a lot of time and resources. We're not under that much scrutiny here, but I'm still holding you to that standard. Okay? And that's why we talk about it. And I think the key there is to understand the context of it and understand what's practical and what isn't. And I feel like, because we do have an audit committee and it's functioning, I haven't written, many of my clients, I write up, you don't have an effective audit committee. Well, I'm not writing that here because we do have an audit committee, and I feel like we're having, you know, appropriate dialogues about the importance of these kind of things. And if there were things that needed to be done, I would be stressing those harder and those kind of things. But, okay. So tell them to get it right. Yeah, I sit on the board of one of the charter schools here, and they got their audit report, and it was absolutely clean. And I looked at that, and I just went, guy.
You know, I thought, okay, I'm not going to make a big deal about it, but I know
and
the controls are in place, that are in place.
And I did that, too. I sat there, and I said, I'm not going to make a terrible deal of it because nobody understands what I'm talking about, but they have absolutely no segregation of duties. They have no written policies and procedures. They do not have a functioning audit committee. They, you know, there's just, and yet I think it's better to talk about it in the way we're doing it, because those board people that I'm sitting there with, they're looking at it going, yeah, we're doing great. And you know what? Because there's no segregation of duties, if the person that was handling their money was stealing from them, they would, just like in all places, if you've got access to cash and books and you write the checks, you've got fraud risk there. And now they're great little people and they only have so much resources, but to sit on that board and think you have no fraud risk or there's no internal controls, their auditor is not telling them the right thing. Well, and that's that's a great point. And that's the other thing that really, so you're going to get me in my irritation zone. But the other thing, when you don't do your job right like that, you're setting people up, because controls are not about catching people. They're about protecting people. And if you're not thinking through your controls, and that, I worry a lot more about putting, you know, somebody in a bad position where they can be accused falsely than I do that we're going to have to catch, you know, a lot of fraud, because I don't have a lot of fraud in my client base. In all the years I've been auditing and doing this, I only have, you know, two or three frauds that I've really had to deal with. But I do have still feel like people need to be protected, and that and we need to have the controls in place that our organization can do so that people aren't put in those bad situations where someone says, well, I think you did that, and they absolutely cannot prove that they did not. Because there isn't anything there. And if you just get caught into thinking, well, we're good and there's nothing we can do, then you do get lazy and you don't do the things that you should do, even in a small organization. And even in a small organization, there's things that should be done. That's my philosophy. And you can tell I'm a little passionate about that, but that's just me. As much as possible, we do it the right way, and we try and think about those kind of things, but still make good decisions about what we can do with the resources that we have, and we just have to find that balance.
I just want to point something out. For those of you who are on the audit committee knew this, but if you go to page 17, I just wanted you to know that I feel like we're making a little bit of headway with our budget plan. If you were to look at this last year, you'll see, well, if you look at the unassigned fund balance, it's $19,000. Last year that number was $27,000, but the thing that you don't see is last year under the standards, what you see is that $371,452 as non-spendable. Okay, that's actually a prepaid.
Big chunk of it is yeah.
That prior to this year was part of the unappropriated fund balance. So if you were looking at last year. Mm-hmm. Under the same microscope that you'd see this year, last year, our unappropriated fund balance, while it showed 27, it actually included about 370.
That's a good point. That's true.
Spendable fund balance, so it would have been a negative by a bunch. So I think we've made headway to the tune of about that $370,000 as far as our fund balance goes. So, that's something that I know, but not everyone would.
Yeah, that's a good point. Does that make sense, what we're saying there? Under the new standard, they said there's a new category called unspendable because you can't spend inventory and you can't spend prepaids. And so even though, you know, that's down in the net assets, they wanted that carved out to show that that's not a very liquid part of net assets. It's like a fixed asset. You can't spend your fixed assets that are down there. You really can't spend all of your inventory, and you really can't spend a prepaid either. And so they're trying to move those things out so that unassigned number is more representative of things that really could be budgeted and carried over. But on a big bucket picture, what Zane's saying is absolutely right, because if we had to have that bucket this year, it wouldn't show up in our restricted or anything else. It would have flowed down into that unrestricted or the unassigned area. It's just a piece of that isn't very liquid, but that is where it would have been. And it does show that we've made probably more progress than we're allowed to show this year.
Central services, transportation, and then interest. And so that says to me, you know, some of the cuts that you made have made a difference. Now, our teachers, you know, that expense didn't go down. But I just want to compliment administration that you do have district administration. Expenses are down. School administration's down. Central services are down. That to me really, and transportation, that shows to me is an indicator of how hard you tried to get this all a handle on all of this. So I just wanted to thank you for that effort. Because it's hard when every area of revenue is down.
Yeah, this is, This has not been easy water to navigate, no question about that.
Well, and our schools are feeling it. You know, it's not like they're not feeling it.
No.
The cuts, we've made significant cuts, but the cuts we've had to make have been made, I think, intelligently and wisely. It's just not easy.
No. No. And, you know, my guess is you're going to continue to have to make some tough decisions. You know, I don't know, think anybody knows for sure when we'll start seeing that funding, you know, swing back more favorably in the state. But based on the legislature's past actions, you know, they're going to balance that budget and they're not going to raise a lot of taxes. So if our revenues as a state continue to decline, it's, you know, it's going to continue to put some real pressure on our school districts to make tough decisions. I mean, that's my personal opinion, probably not my auditor opinion. So, thank you. We very much appreciate the opportunity to do the work, and we appreciate working with Zane and Ted and the people that work hard to do the business side of the school district. So, thank you. You're welcome. That was fun. Very nice. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, I would entertain a motion to accept the audit committee. The audit report.
Jim Blair will make that motion.
Okay, it's been, the motion has been made by Jim Blair. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Christy Cooley. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, our next item is the action on a resolution on idling. And
Jack Reed is here if he
left. I did. After our discussion with the city council and some of their actions, there are two areas in these next two items. We went back into the municipal code. The municipal code specifically said that if temperatures are 35 degrees or below, that there is an idling ordinance to encourage those that have vehicles to have them off after 3 minutes. What we're looking at, and I had not had for this, but I had worked with Ann a little bit on a proposed resolution for idling. We've not done a lot of resolutions. But it's more of an opportunity for us to educate our public, specifically our parents. And as we do have most of our elementary schools are walking schools, or at least a great majority of each of the schools are walking schools. And we are in a situation where that means a lot of parents are coming, especially in the wintertime, to drop off and pick up. The biggest problem is more to pick up in the afternoon than it is to drop off in the morning, because in terms of the time that they're there. So with this resolution, the proposal is that we would approve it. Then we will then work with getting information out, some of the similar information that the young people would actually probably get their assistance to help us in getting the word out about idling with our parents and hopefully our students at the high school who do have cars, and try to do all we can to minimize the challenges we have during the wintertime. Yeah.
I like the idea of the signs, you know, some signs encouraging people, because I know I was picking up a grandchild on Friday, and I couldn't believe that some people actually left their cars, went in, got their child, and came back.
Right.
And I was sitting by one car that it was probably 10 minutes running there in the parking lot. That's not good for our little ones walking by. Right onto the playground, you know, admitting that.
So initially I stated to recommendation that you direct me to develop the resolution. I do have this here. If you want to have further wordsmithing on this, the intent would be to have a signed resolution by the board president and dated, and have that available for our schools and then also the public.
Any questions? Okay,
so do you want us to look at this resolution and adopt it, or do you want us to tell you to?
It's your choice. I would like, in terms of directing me and then reviewing and getting back to me within the next couple of days, I think would be the best. Then try to wordsmith here at the board table.
There's one consideration though, you need to be careful with. You have some people that can't afford later model vehicles. And so when you start looking at emissions testing and things like that, you have to take into consideration that the economic circumstances of people. And that, in my opinion, needs to be factored in.
You weren't at the meeting.
I'm familiar with some circumstances over that would really hurt people.
It was interesting, in the meeting, as they had these scientists speaking to us, what was it, 7% of the vehicles cause
90%.
a large percentage of the pollution, and if you can get those vehicles either fixed or off the road, the air can improve greatly.
I understand that.
And they let us know the effect.
Know who owns those vehicles. I think that's my point.
The idling is different. And you know, we have a neighbor who gets up at 6 a.m. and turns his car on and runs it for 30 minutes every morning.
So
it warms up, so he get out there. But he, you know, for 30 minutes, he's sitting out there idling.
Yeah, it's not good.
I would anticipate, Marshall, we'd have conversation about buses as well, because I do know buses, if we do adopt this, tend to idle as well at the bus stop. How will we answer that question in regards to our own school buses?
I will be glad to work with Wayne.
I think they
have been working on that because of the diesels and things.
They've had that for years, I think.
What I see in terms of in my area at the bus that stay, they turn it off, and when I actually went out with the sixth graders, we were waiting for our stop. The driver turned it off and waited for the 10 minutes that we were there before we needed to start to get to the first stop. So I know they have some things in place already, but I think it would be good for us to publicize that.
And didn't they convert a number of buses in a certain way? Because it used to be you had to have them on with diesel so long before they'd work or something, and I know they retrofitted.
They've done some retrofitting, but I think it would be good to have that information out as well as what are we doing through our busing.
Because I know, I'm sure that most often they do that, but I'm not sure if it's 100% that's what it was.
I would be really surprised if
that won't be finalized until we do.
Now, whether the driver complies is another issue.
Yeah.
I would be really surprised if they don't have any.
Well, and I liked what Marshall's written here, because it does basically that the Board of Education encourages parents, staff, and patrons to abide by the Logan City Ordinance regarding idling as they drop off and pick up students or have any dealings at any of our school properties. It's not saying we're going to be punitive. It's not saying that... I like the way that we're encouraging people to think about their idling. And I know after this discussion, when I was at the bank the other day, I turned off my car. And I think, you know, just those little reminders help us to do what's better for our air. Now, I do know that the one that the PM 2.5 is going to take some more technical.
Yes.
I received an email on my Novell one. I don't know if any of the rest of you received from Jeff Gilbert. He's head of the CMPO.
No, I have not.
And it came today, and anyway, it goes through all of, and I think some of my friends on city council must have me on their list or something, because...
Could you send that to me? Because I had asked Herm. Herm had sent me something today.
They
were talking about
today.
It tonight at their city council.
Yeah, and it was with some recommendations. I read through the recommendations, and frankly...
Couldn't understand.
I don't understand any of them from their PowerPoint presentation, but
If you can send that over to me.
I will send it over to you.
Basically, on the second one, we're really going to combine these. One is the idling specifically, the other in terms of the emissions control. Reviewing what was the resolution back in 2004 that the city council did. They did two resolutions, one to Utah State University and one to the General Cache Valley, encouraging the county council to adopt the emissions control. They're pushing it again, basically, as they looked at the review of the data over the last 7 years. It is only getting worse, and the ability to reduce by at least 10% what we are currently having for our air in the PM2.5, it is worthy for us to consider that because of our children. The amount of time our children are out and realizing that we don't go by the red, yellow, green process for our students that is done by the health department in a different fashion, but they are out, and as they talked and Dr. Red talked about the fact that having students out is just as important as well to be, make sure that they're having. So we know our kids are going to be out for the most part during some of this time, and if we are able to protect them by 10% more, to me that is worth an encouragement to the city council. The county council.
When we purchase new vehicles, are we going to look towards the opportunity to buy natural gas?
For our fleet, our own fleet?
We can start looking at that. Usually we'll look at the state contracts, and at least since I've got here, that's primarily what we've done.
Because if we're going to encourage this, to me we ought to be moving in that direction.
Again, some of it is cost. Many of the we have just updated our maintenance fleet over the last few years, and we haven't really bought anything, I believe, in the last 2 years. The cars that we buy for our driver's training is based upon the amount of money that we're getting from the state in reimbursement. That's about $21,000 to $25,000 a year. It's been on average. Right now that'll purchase about one car. What we'll need to do is look at. I know the cost of natural gas cars to begin with are more. We have some other restrictions within our driver's training that we've got. We used to, for 1 year we went to the Hyundai Sonatas, but they have console in the middle, and the driver's training people really like to be able to have. The automatic, but on the fly, not on the floor, and the ability for the having a bench seat in the front. You don't find cars like that very much anymore, so that would add to the potential challenge. Those are really the only cars that we do add to the fleet.
We'll look at them next time.
But we can't.
We get money. We have at least traditionally almost every year. So
I know it's now more available. Cars have been retrofitted. In a better fashion, so they're more available. Plus, stops are more available. We have it down at, I believe it is it. It's the one on Second North and 10th West. CNG, I think you have it.
Well, and what's been interesting, I don't know. I'm sure Jim has. When you're at Utah State and you're behind a natural gas bus versus a diesel bus, such a difference. The smell that comes out, just the emission is such a difference. And I think, I think we have a responsibility to help our students, number one, have safe air, but also to learn about what we can do to be environmentally sound, to do all we can to take care of our environment without becoming extremists, but we need to teach them how to be good stewards of the earth.
So actually, we could probably, if you want to look at there are two separate actions, but the discussion is the same. And I understand about the sensitivity about that. But the reality is those that are less than 1996 are the ones that are being targeted right now as the biggest emitters. Mm-hmm. And my understanding from that presentation, though, is that they
the emissions control that they're looking at here is still not at the same level as they look at it on the Wasatch Front. I've been used to that for years. I mean, it's been going on there for almost 20, 25 years. But it's a higher standard there than they are actually proposing, recommending from here. But whatever we do would be in conjunction with the recommendations that we were given at that meeting by Utah State University people and Dr. Redd, in conjunction with what the city would be proposing.
So do we need a motion to do something?
Well, I've given you two potential actions on each one. Basically, both would be to direct me to finalize resolutions that can be signed by the board president. They would not be, that would not occur until after each one of you have seen it.
And as you know from the legislature, a resolution really doesn't do a lot except it puts our names behind something.
Well, you know, that's all student trying to encourage the county. That's what it's
and
all about.
And, but that letter would be an encouragement as well. It would not be a demand, but an encouragement.
Mark, I think that on the resolution, I think that the bottom part that you should add students, so that they are also included in that, because we do have students at Woven High.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. Should we put them first, students, parents?
Because they're driving to school, probably idle.
No, but there's another one. If you look, the next page says, on the board book, it encourages another one. 147 talks about doing another one on that. Yeah.
Two resolutions are what we're are proposing.
So do you want a motion on the resolution?
Yes.
I'll make a motion that we approve the resolution on emissions testing and cash count. No, on idling. Resolution on idling and cash count.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been seconded by Jim Blair. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. We also need a resolution on emission testing.
And I would make a motion that we create a resolution on encouraging county council to do emissions testing so that we can reduce the PM2.5. I do think, like Marshall said, we need the updated numbers that are whereases so that it is current and meaningful as we get it out to our patrons and students so that it's accurate. So
okay,
that's my motion.
It's been moved by Ann that we direct Marshall to put together a resolution on emission testings to encourage Cache County Council to pass something. How's that?
Well,
is that close
to enough? Include all aspects, including the economic and concerns as well.
That
in the motion.
That wasn't part of my original motion.
I can't vote for it.
Well, then you need to amend my motion. We need a second before it can be amended, though.
Okay.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Been moved by Ann and seconded by Jim for Marshall to put together a resolution on emissions testing in this valley.
I'd like to amend that, though, to include further review to include the economic conditions and concerns that could affect the residents of Cache Valley.
It's part of the whereases.
Yeah. It's pretty important to me.
Yeah, we need a second. Do I have a second?
Can you call for discussion?
You bet.
So to explain that further, what are you trying to accomplish with that, Fred?
We haven't got all of the information nor the research in place yet to know all of the ramifications and all of the concerns that could affect the emissions and so forth, and those who are participating within this, senior citizens and so forth. We haven't got all that information yet. I think further study needs to be in place.
They
That's what
they presented.
Done.
they presented the new information that included the, and they didn't break it down by area, or but they did break it down by vintage of cars, and those that were 1996 and older are the most.
Yeah, that's the whole concern I have. The people that drive those cars, senior citizens, economically impoverished, and so forth. So I, okay. It's just a problem. It hasn't. I don't think it's got everything in place that it needs to have.
I wish you had been at the meeting, because it was very.
I was at a water meeting.
Yeah, you were double booked that night.
So explain to me how emissions testing adversely affects those.
Because
the
emission testing
will take
those cars, and they won't be able to pass because they're older cars. That's the whole point. And they should be allowed to continue to drive.
You're economically disadvantaged.
Yes.
And you can't afford a new car.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
And they still, you're left without a vehicle. So it could create a financial hardship. Yeah. Is that where you're going?
Yes, exactly.
Is
right.
There
I think
an
there
option
should be exception.
To make those cars that don't pass?
No.
So that they can pass?
They can't afford to do that. The only way they can afford to do that is to buy a new car.
You can't make older cars that don't pass emissions pass?
No, not completely, no.
Because we had an older vehicle that we were able to get passed every year in case. And it still passes.
It's amazing,
actually. If they have catalytic converters on them.
Yeah. And it had a catalytic. So,
but
you know, it's...
Prior to 1970, you don't have catalytic converters.
And one of the points that was made by these scientists that presented to us is that it's a small percentage of vehicles that are doing the majority of the pollution, and by getting them off the road instead of just allowing them on the road, we're actually creating unsafe environments for our kids.
Well, and here's where even the scientists don't agree all across the board. I found that to be the case, as I've done some research on that. And so I still have a problem. We need to look at it more. That's what you said. Now, if you don't want to, that's okay.
When you say we need to look at it more, are you suggesting like we as a board?
No,
or
no, I'm talking about the scientific community needs to have further study. There needs to be further study across the board to happen. That's my opinion.
And I will send you this information from the CS.
I've already heard that. I don't agree with all of their findings. I'm sorry.
The thing that concerns me, though, is that are we saying that those people that are financially strapped and cannot afford a new car can drive a car that pollutes the environment so that other people, like my mother, can't go outside in the wintertime because she has bad asthma. She has bad asthma.
What you're doing is over.
No, but I'm just saying if that's what I'm understanding.
Exactly right. That's minimum amount. Those people can't afford it. They're not going to have that great of an impact.
Interesting.
But just ignore what I said.
If I was listening to what you said, and that's kind of the controversies about it, but with the information that we received from those scientists and the danger, they said it's like our children having a smoker.
Even our scientists don't all agree. I can show you some scientific evidence that could refute some of that as well. So you can go back and forth.
Well, I'm going to make, I guess I can't make it. Can I make it? And I'm somebody else has to make it.
We have an amendment.
Okay.
But was there a second?
There was not a second to the amendment.
Here's what I'm saying. Maybe someone ought to make a motion that Marshall put something together, as we stated, then we will look at it and discuss it at that point.
So we're actually voting on something rather than just...
The idling one we can get going, but on the other one, let's...
The idling one, I have no problem.
We can spend some time on our...
And perhaps bring in some more of the information.
But you work towards coming...
There's a motion on the table right now, isn't it?
Yes.
Basically, yes.
But the intent was that would all.
So
that
you would encourage
be
someone to table the resolution.
Actually,
on
I think the resolution, now that we understand it, I think the first having him make a resolution can stand.
Because we can always modify that.
Because we can discuss it.
We haven't made a resolution. We've asked him to make one.
Yes.
That he will bring to us, which we will approve.
Yes. So the question is, can our idling one then go forward?
We already asked
okay.
We've already done that.
We've done that. Okay.
That's good.
All right, then my motion was
okay.
Instruct
it's
the superintendent
been
to work
and seconded.
On it. Mm-hmm.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
You're opposed
motion.
To any of us.
You're opposed
no,
to the resolution.
No, I'm just
that's what we voted on.
We haven't made a resolution. We've made a proposal that he make a resolution. All right.
We'll just leave. Motion carries. Marshall, okay. We'll go for it.
Okay.
And then we can vote on
okay, we'll now go to reports. Fred, anything?
I attended the evaluation committee. It was a pretty large group. A lot of information today. Very interesting. And looking forward to continue with that. So,
okay, anything else? Anne?
I was going to comment on one thing that I really enjoyed that meeting with the county council. I felt like it was, but city council, I felt like it was really important for us to discuss the recreation center and other things that are important. And I think we're kind of forcing the city council to actually talk within their ranks about that issue. And
I think the city council is in favor of keeping the rec center. I don't know where the mayor stands.
Yeah, that was interesting email going back and forth. I also appreciated having the scientists come and present what they did in Ed Red and from the health department their point of view. And that was good. And I think it's just good for us. I know you've promoted it, Marshall, and we don't always get the response on the other end, but I think that is something we need to continue to do. Went to, as did Christy and Jim came into, the facilities assessment work that's been done. That's always fascinating to see how ideas develop and are moved on there. And I, into a couple of things at Hillcrest, the biggest thing for me right now is our tutoring project for the fall. We had our last day last Thursday, and it's amazing the number of volunteer hours that were put in tutoring and reading to children, and every child made gains, and a lot of them will be moving, rotating out of the program with this Bibbles assessment, and they won't be in it again when we start up in January. But, you know, it's exciting to see, we were able to see what happens at Ellis. We've had 30 to 34 volunteers there two mornings a week and reading for an hour, and the relationships that have developed. And some kids come for the last 10 minutes, but they're on time to school because they're always late to school otherwise. And there have been some really interesting benefits, you know, that have not been what we planned on. One of our tutors presented to his student, asked permission about a book that he wrote about his growing up that's been published, and that was a really sweet thing that happened. And so it's been a great experience, and it will be interesting to see how the three projects that we have going, what impact they actually have. I also went to the thinking map training. That was an amazing 6 hours of work, and I learned so much of it. And we will have two more sessions with that group with this thinking map training, and it was fascinating. I loved how it organized my thinking and those on my table thinking.
We will have an additional first day in January if you are interested in taking that. Let's see.
Do you know what
day? January 25th, I believe.
Bad first day, Marshall.
Sorry.
Some people will be third first day.
Somebody will be in Disneyland.
Okay, thanks, Ann. Jim?
I went to the same place she did, so I don't have anything else to report.
Okay. Christy?
The only comment I wanted to make was our lunch with the county when we meet with our legislators. I would propose that we, since it's our turn next year, I really like the one we had informally at, you know, what, a month before that. So I'm thinking that perhaps next year we could do a breakfast instead of a lunch and include the legislators in that, and rather than, because I was kind of disappointed in the turnout of that. So I thought maybe if we kind of combine food with the meeting, maybe we would get more people and more dialogue in that rather than having it lunchtime. So that's my suggestion. I just wanted to report on the foundation real quick. They're planning on doing the foundation Dancing with the Stars on April 20th. So if you can all try really hard to attend that, it's going to be a very fun event held at the high school. They have contacted the USU Ballroom dance team, and they'll be dancing with several people from our staff. So it's going to be a very fun evening. They're still trying to find the perfect person to MC that, and hoping to get one of the TV personalities from Southwest to come and MC that. So it's going to be very fun. So put that on your calendar for April 20th.
Do you have anyone who has ties to Logan that are in the media down there?
Bob Welty did, but he's no longer around. Amanda somebody, Butterfield, but she's no longer at KSL. She came up and did the Big Blue auction. She used to be on Channel 5, but she's suddenly not there anymore. I don't know where she is.
Carol Lobb has a connection with somebody. She's going to call
her.
Yeah,
she would have a connection with somebody.
And the golf tournament is on August 24th. So if you'll put that on your calendar as well. A Day on the Hill for USBA is on January the 26th.
Oh, Richard, I like the USBA. Things that came out, and it has dates to remember on that.
That is very good. I believe that's all I have.
Okay. Other than what's been said, I met with the Fast Forward board. They, as you know, they didn't make AYP, and so Richard West is the president of the board, and so they went in and done an appraisal, you know, the Center for the School of the Future went in and done an appraisal. This is a form. This is what they went. They got all the indicators, done everything for them, went in and did that. And after that, then they came up and assisted with making an application for financial assistance to help them. And they are applying for $200,000 to help them get on thing, and they went through, and it's well planned.
Where's it going to?
Who's that grant going to?
Pardon?
Isn't that a state grant? School improvement grant?
I guess so. I know the state.
So it's the state of Utah.
That Richard really is doing a lot to help them immensely. It's absolutely phenomenal what he has done for that school. And so Richard was feeling fairly confident that this would go through, and so that they can assist there.
I hate to tell you, but the ESEA Flexibility Committee has just voted to change our state plan with the feds, and there will anyone who is currently on school improvement, that will go away completely. And the whole process of how that is calculated will be changed to the betterment. It will be done at this point, the recommendation, and we'll finalize in January, is to go with the metrics for doing the grading of schools, which have a growth component to it. But the work is not going to go in vain, because it will transition, but they're not going to have the penalties of which they're under right now for not making it. So that it will at least allow them to have some breathing room that they've not had in the past.
They basically said it come down to six students out there not being there, and
but they had remarkable increases on
certain areas. They did. Again, it was the subgroups that, shot them down. That ESCAA flexibility has been a very interesting group. We're not all united. Some of the superintendents are actually wanting to keep our existing AYP, and we're going, we don't understand that. But part of it is because they're so, they were not involved in the grading of schools metrics. I mean, the process they went through to get to grading of schools, which we'll go through, it's part of the law, but to make it so it is fair, is extremely impressive. And they're using what is called a Colorado growth model, which allows for a very, again, scientifically, mathematically complex process, but to really show a school is growing. And it's an area that, compared to what we have under AYP, which is a new pass, which is the old growth model based on a value table, you know, if you get this many kids and you get this many points and you average everything up, it was very low. It was low tech. This is now we're looking at a much higher tech. The problem in most people's eyes right now is the fact that they're just ticked about having schools graded, and that we can't do anything about. That's law. But the committee that I was on with when we did that, and the people that worked on that from the state level, and the two national groups that they worked with, came up with as valid of an approach to that as we could have asked for. And that's what we're hoping that they'll use the metrics for the ESCA flexibility. But it's not a done, that part's not a done deal, but we will ask for a waiver. And it will be for this year, starting this year. So, any school that's on school improvement or potentially going that way because they have had a no on AYP, including our four schools, that there will be no consequences and penalties next year.
Okay. Zane, anything you have?
Yep. If you'll jump to the portal, please. Same little section, if you go to November 2011 PDF, there's the financial report for the month. We were on a short string this month, that's why I didn't go out in the original packets. But I don't see anything there about this anomaly. Just as a matter of information, we have received our big tax check from Cass County, came on the 9th of December, and so a lot of that local revenue that we budget, we get in the month of December and in January. So if you have any questions about that, and then if you go back to the portal, just wanted to let you know that we're planning to do a little remodel downstairs. Before you go, I'd be happy to walk you through what we're proposing to do. We put out an RFP to do that, and if you look at the remodel floor plan, you can see if you pull that up, we can finance.
This is downstairs where Paul has been. We have three small offices.
Where the print shop was?
No, this is on the first floor where food services was. Food services is in order. When we made the
first floor, that's the floor
on the first that we're on, yes. As we consolidated and collapsed positions, one of the things that we were noticing is we were not having the ability to have people greeting our customers, because of the fact that everything that we have, they're locked into offices. We felt it was best, because of the collapsing of the business office, to put Karen out in the area, you know, just to the west of us, to greet people as they're coming in for not only food services, but also for the business office. So she is able to handle that flow, because Leisha had left, and then we were bringing in only a part-time person who was going to be doing accounts
payable. But then that left, by moving Karen and Paul over to that area, it left no one in the front in the HR part, because Karen used to be the front person for human resources, and as well as food services. We have Maria, we have a part-time in Susan Redd, and now we have a part-time payroll. That payroll in this process is now in with human resources. They're working together. But if you started looking at the logistics of those rooms, everything was in small processes, and we, instead of having signs up to say, please go to the third office on the right, we felt that it would be best if we could, with what we had, is to tear down some walls between the columns that are not load-bearing walls, to make that an open space, so that with our part-time people and Maria, we will always have somebody there to greet and work with the public. And that's what you're seeing in the proposal.
So if you pull up that building plan, the one on the left shows demolition legend, and you'll see there's a petition there. Going up, if you look at the very right, there's a smaller room and a bigger room.
Paul's
the bigger room
office
is
was.
Where HR director is right now, and the smaller room is where Paul was. The wall separating the two will come out. And then the long wall going east and west is going to come out. So that will open that whole big area up, and over on the right, you can see how they're proposed to have that laid out. So where Suzanne is now, she'll move back to where Maria and Susan are, and Maria and Susan and Tammy, our new payroll specialist, will be out here working together. We'll have the kiosk set up on the south wall in there that I was telling you a little bit about. I think it's going to be a great customer front.
We've not had a good place for people to come in and sign. Maybe we have little boards that they use to try to do things, and trying to find cubby holes to actually make application, and that we're trying to make this so that they have a much better customer service.
So if they were applying for a position, they could use that, but also if they came in and they were signing up for benefits and for their payroll and their all of those things.
Change their W-4 or anything like that.
That's all done right there.
It's all done right there.
All the fingerprint information is there. The ability to do the, as the new people are coming in and are having to sign in for the GBS system, that was all handled. Everything is handled within that area. And because we have two part-time and one full-time, we'll always have somebody at that point helping out in the front so they can greet and meet with our customers.
The other thing that I've put in here is if you go back to the portal there, it says the district office remodel HR, okay, PDF. If you pull that up, that's the RFP that I sent out. And just wanted to let you know, we got those back yesterday. We evaluated those today. If you go down to their selection criteria, you can see that we evaluated each proposal based on their experience in similar projects. They get 10 points for that, 15 for experience in projects completed by a construction manager. 30% was tied to their bid price, and that's by state law that has to be. We can't weigh it at any less than that, but it's not all about price. Then proposed management team site resumes, and then what the perceived ability is for them to mobilize and get the thing done on schedule. We're trying to get this whole thing done starting as soon as possible. We said by the 22nd of December, so hopefully during that 2 weeks that we were shut down, they'll get all the dirty stuff done and out of the way. I think we'll be waiting on carpet before we're done. But anyway, so we've done those evaluations. We'll notify the successful bidder tomorrow or the proposal.
What do you think the cost is going to be?
It's going to be about $26,000. Now, here's a question they have for you. If you look at the purchasing policy, there's nothing in there that says there's a certain level above which the board needs to authorize it. What it does say is if it's over $20,000, it has to go through district procurement, which is what this process is. As I refine our business policy going forward, I'm just wondering, is there a level above which you guys would like to be able to say we approve this purchase? And just, I'll have you be thinking about that. We'll talk about it in a future work session when we get serious about that. I think there are some boards that want to be a little more involved on things like that.
How are you going to deal with cost overruns?
Well, how we do that.
We just have to, you know, I'm not just talking about this project, but like, you know, maybe you want to have a policy that says
I thought it was 15,000. If it was 15,000, we had to be involved.
I haven't seen that anywhere.
We had talked about that, but it's not been put into any policy.
And I appreciated when Marshall came in. Suddenly, we saw everything that was happening over the summer, where we used to. Oh, thank you for putting audio enhancement in the entire middle school. And we didn't have a clue that that was happening. And, you know, I just, it's been so nice to see what the rotation is of the computers and, you know, approving some of that, because otherwise we came in and some big thing was done and we had no clue.
I was under the impression that's what we were supposed to be told anyway.
Well, if you look at the purchasing policy, it just says anything over 20 needs to go through district procurement. And there's nothing.
The actual written policy says that. We've tried to, as practice, to bring to you anything over 15,000, but we've never redone our policy.
And frankly, 15 in my mind is way low for you. I mean, if it's built into the budget and it's within the budget, I'm not sure that it's an issue, which is why we move forward on this, because it's well within the budget. If there are things that are going to happen that are going to require an amendment to the budget, obviously that comes to you folks. If there are things like the insurance consultant thing, that's not something we have in the budget. This would be something new, so we bring that to your attention. The capital requests, we do that. That's what you're talking about, that Marshall has had you guys look at and approve as we put the budgets together every year. These are the things that we know about. There are things that come up through the year like this that we have an allowance built into the budget to take care of things like this. But I'm just suggesting that we give some thought, and if you want it specified in the procurement policy, that listen, you don't spend $50,000 on anything without our blessing first, or whatever that level happens to be. I don't have a problem with that, and it needs to be what you folks are most comfortable with. Anyway, just be thinking about that.
That is one of the policies that we want to get to before we end this fiscal year. That's a goal that I have. I know that Ann and I have talked, and I've also talked with Zane. We've been talking about the change in our financial policies, but we've not done them, and now we've got to make that a goal this year to get it done.
If you look at the purchasing policy, anything under $1,000, they can just go buy it. One to $5,000, they're supposed to get telephone quotes and document that they've got those. Over five to 25 and 20, they're supposed to get a written quote. Okay.
And now we need to put an over 25,000.
And over.
You have to check the list.
Over. Exactly. That's precisely right. If it's over 25,000, we're going to have to look at the federal. I call it the black ball register.
So did we look at it for this?
This doesn't apply because it's not
federal money.
It's not federal money for one.
something, and it's not a single item. I mean, what they're talking about is if you go buy $25,000 worth of computers from so-and-so, is Apple Computer on the federal do not buy list? Well, no, they're not.
It's been our practice. Our practice has been to bring
it to
it.
And that's only since
Marshall's been here. Because we used to have some really big purchases that people would come and thank me for, and I knew nothing about them.
I think I'm doing a really good service here by informing you that we're planning to do this.
Yeah. Well, and here
and
it is.
How did you shoot out if you didn't?
Well, I'm not stupid.
And it's interesting because we have our fixed assets at $1,000, and if we, that means that every computer in the place has to be a fixed asset,
that's
right?
That's not practical. Because for our purposes, we don't capitalize it unless it's over $10,000.
So we actually, that needs to.
It is woefully out of date.
It is woefully out of date. And that's something that Mike has often put in the audit report, is that we need to redo that.
I actually feel quite good about the purchase, you know, about a lot of the things that are in place. Why haven't, well, it's a time issue why I haven't been done here before. But anyway.
I think they're a good guideline.
We'll have some good discussion about that, I think, in some work sessions over the next few months. I'm thinking, you know, maybe we can start to get at some of this stuff. We'll see. We have a meeting tomorrow. On another note, I've got a meeting at Alpine School District tomorrow. Monday and Tuesday last week, we spent 10 hours both days. Well, 2 5-hour presentations on Monday. On Tuesday, we had another 5-hour presentation looking at fiscal accounting systems, because you're aware that we've got to have a new fiscal system in place by this time next year. Tomorrow, we're meeting to basically finalize our review of those proposals and make a recommendation as to which direction we want to go. And, you know, based on the preliminary stuff, that's $100,000 to $200,000 deal.
We better have budgeted for.
And I budgeted $250,000. I'm hoping we can get by for a lot less than that. The high end is right close to $200,000. So they were all supposed to go back and sharpen their pencils, and we'll be looking at all those things tomorrow. Hoping to find something that works as well for Kintiq as Alpine.
And this is because the state decided not to do it anymore, right?
Yeah.
25 districts or so.
Preliminarily, Paul Godfrey and South Sand Pete ran some rudimentary numbers, but we know that USOE spends about $800,000 a year on fiscal support and all that other stuff, and they're planning on doing away with that. The irony is, school districts, the 23 districts that are using fiscal combined, we're going to spend over $3 million on systems to support us.
And that's the first, and then the ongoing costs will be closer to probably.
But some of those school districts already are using other systems anyway, right?
No, but these are the 23 that are using fiscal.
Okay.
And I think one of the things we want to point out with our legislators next time we meet is I want to show them, you know, they come down really hard on USOE, and there are some places where they could improve their customer service. And in my mind, this whole fiscal thing, I blame them, I blame us as much as I blame them, because we didn't push it like we should. And everybody wants Mikey to try the mush before they try the mush, so to speak. And and everybody's waited and waited. And so last February, we were ready to move. Ogden had already moved on fiscal too. We were in line to do it in February this year, and they got us together and said, we plan to discontinue support of it. And said, well, thanks for telling us now, because I'm moved to fiscal two now, but I think had we all been pushing things 5 years ago the way we are right now, we'd be in a different place, I believe, but or not. But it's a good example in my mind. There are some real benefits to having services provided through USOE, and the legislature shouldn't be in a fired hurry to slam their budgets and everything, because this is a classic situation. They're going to save $800. The taxpayers throughout the state are going to fork out an extra $3 million. And that doesn't make sense to most people that I've talked to. So, anyway, what else? I think that's all until we get into the discussion.
Okay.
Very quickly on the legislative time frame, legislature will start at the end of January. I'd like to know if I can have Ann and Christy help us out on the legislative committee. Ann, if you would spend some time on, and I'd like to get you and Dave together to talk about caucuses and what's really happening there. We have the PowerPoint, we've gotten that out. We're going to continue to get people, and we're looking at each of the precincts within Logan to see how many people we can get to each of the individual caucus meetings for both the Democrats and the Republicans. Christy, I'd like for you to spend some time on voter registration and what possibly we can do, because I think we'll still have a window before March for voter registration, because in order to be a delegate, you have to have registered.
Or you can register there.
But I'd like to do the push beforehand so we kind of know everything. You are kind of an expert on that. If you could both help me out on that, we would appreciate that.
You know, if we could even have a link to the online voter registration, or at least, can you do it online? I think you can just download a form what you do. You download the form and then you send it in. But if we could...
We just need to do that push in January, and I believe that's before USDA is when we have our meeting scheduled. So I'll work with you on that date and time, but I would like your...
And the school newsletters. You know, Eric Markworth does one that he does via email, and it's really a good one, and I think if it can have a little part, make your voice heard for education, go to the caucus meetings, here's how you register to vote.
We want to have a concerted effort knowing who's going and who's going to be in line to be a delegate. So we have our group of delegates. It's going to be a very interesting process. You've got a lot of different factions out there right now vying for
more
the attention, and it could be it's going to be a very interesting political session.
Well, the Republican Party might change their process, because I know last time they let people register to be Republicans on site, which ended up backfiring somewhat, because people
in Christie's group...
They
had
not,
people they never knew
they
who
never
show up and take over.
Exactly.
And one of the things
and they were registered to be... They registered to vote in a caucus, but they didn't really live in that that area. So I would hope that the Republican Party would fix that and say, in order for you to be a delegate, you need to be on our list
as
of
far,
that night.
At least what I've seen, they have not changed any of their rules
that
I could find online.
I don't know if Ann would
be able to find that out.
I could ask as precinct chairman if they're going to change that at all. I didn't make it to the last meeting because I had some other meeting going on at the same time. But
we will be at minimum school day on Wednesday of next week, and then we're out until the 3rd. And we'll be back on the 3rd.
Okay. I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual, collective bargaining, and the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property.
I would so move.
It's been moved by Ann Geary that we go into closed session. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been seconded by Jim Blair. Those in favor, Christy?
Aye.
Just say yes.
Yes.
Jim?
Yes.
Ann?
Yes.
Fred? Lynn? Yes. We will now go into a closed session. Stacy will turn the tape recorder off.
Well, we'll turn this portion off and turn that
in the back room.
We do have one portion on this that is for the confidence. I don't know if you want to start with that and have it off. We'll do the other two.
But we really should do that. We're meeting in closed session.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, just logistically.